Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and I am very excited about my guest today, Eric Hodgson. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Rachel. So good to be with you today.
Coming to us from Tampa, or just outside of Tampa.
Yes.
I want to read your bio for those listening and get this incredible information that you do as a resilient advocate for those grappling with the profound impact of loss, intimately understanding the challenges that accompany the grieving process. Your personal journey took a powerful turn in early 2014 when you tragically lost your 15-year-old daughter, Zoe, to suicide. Frustrated by the prevailing narrative that merely surviving grief marked the end point of the journey, you embarked on a mission to redefine and expand what grief support can be. Over the last decade, you've dedicated yourself to transforming the way we approach grief. Through coaching and training, you've empowered thousands of grieving individuals to overcome the mental hurdles that impede progress, enabling them to navigate the formidable challenges that accompany loss. You have shared your insights twice from the TEDx stage, of which that's how I found you. You further solidified your impact by publishing the Amazon best-selling book, A Sherpa Named Zoe, which is currently available on Amazon, and I'll include the link. Currently, you channel your expertise into personalized one-on-one sessions with clients, guiding them through the process of survival, recovery, and ultimately living beyond the loss of a loved one. And I'll include that as well. I am so glad that you're here.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so honored to be part of this, Rachel. This is going to be a great conversation.
Yes. To get us started, I wanted to learn a little bit more about you, or have our listeners, my listeners, do that. Can you tell me about your cultural upbringing and background?
So yeah, my dad is a former Navy pilot, and so I was born in Monterey, California.
Oh wow!
And 6 months after I was born, my dad was stationed over on the East Coast, and so for the rest of his duty, we spent time in several locations on the East Coast, including Norfolk, Virginia, Jacksonville, Florida, and then ultimately Brunswick, Maine, where he retired out. And they're still living there to this day, 47 years later.
Wow.
So.
Wow. So you've traveled all over. Do you know how to surf? Coming from Monterey.
I don't.
Not there long enough.
I wasn't surfing at 6 months, although I've heard of people that do that. No, you know, I've never tried surfing, and I've always wanted to. I think it's just a really cool way to connect with the earth and, you know, the waves and just the power of the ocean. It's just so powerful. So,
yeah. And now that you live close to the ocean as well, you have no reason not to learn how to do this. I'm advocating that this becomes a life thing for you.
I think I need to do that. Absolutely.
My second question is, I asked if you knew your Enneagram. You do not, but you also have another modality of personality testing that you do know and are an advocate for.
So it's called the Kolbe assessment, K-O-L-B-E.
Okay.
And it's a very powerful assessment that really shows where your strengths lie in working with others. There's four buckets, if you will. There's fact finding, there's follow through, quick start, and implementer. And after I took that assessment a few years ago, my biggest strength lies in fact finding, meaning that if I want to start something new, I need quite a bit of information before I can get started. Not all of the information, but practically 70% of it before I can get going. And so where my next strength is follow through. So if I've got to follow up with someone, or if I've got to see things through the details, that's my next highest number. And then interestingly enough, my lowest number is quick start.
That means
that if I wanted to get started quickly with something, a project or a task, I would be quickly stopped in my tracks because I would say, wait, I don't have all the facts, all the information. But it's a very powerful way to kind of see how you can interact and connect with other, maybe even a leader in your company, or even a leader within your community.
Right.
In terms of how you guys can connect. So yeah, it's a really powerful assessment.
That's awesome. So you wouldn't shame those of us who are, let's say, lower on the details or the needing information before we just jump?
Well, no, it's interesting because everybody has a certain strength of those four.
Right.
And so, and we saw that when I was working in my last company, it was very interesting how the different personalities, if you will, were able to interact.
Yeah.
I interacted very well with my boss because he was a very high quick start, where I'm a low quick start.
Right.
He was a very low fact finder. I was a very high fact finder. So it was almost like a puzzle piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So what he lacked, you helped supplement, and vice versa. So it worked.
Exactly.
And you didn't hurt each other's projects in the process.
No. In fact, if anything, it kind of helped bolster the projects even more. So yeah.
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 Oh, that's so cool. Okay. So now you're doing work as an author, as a speaker. Can you tell us about how you kind of transitioned into that?
That was a very interesting process, only because I spent my entire career up to that point as a corporate leader in IT.
Right.
And so leading teams through technical challenges, supporting, it's interesting how this kind of worked out, but supporting the end users in a business was something that really used to light me up. If I could help fix your computer or get your phone turned on or fixed or whatever, and I saw you leaving my, you know, office like with a smile on your face, that's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
So that was my goal. And in 2014, I unfortunately lost my daughter Zoe.
Mm.
And that was a very challenging time, as you could imagine, only because of the grief process. Is not, there's no manual for it, right? There's every one of these situations is unique. Every one of these setbacks presents its own challenges based on your own capacity to navigate them. In some cases, lack of capacity, just because of just circumstances throughout your life. But that was a very transformative time for me, because when I got back to work, I really understood what was most important in life.
Right.
It just became crystal clear in a very short period of time that if somebody was upset because their computer wasn't working, is that really the most important thing right now?
Right.
You know, so I questioned a lot at that point.
Mm.
I still wanted to help people. And so, excuse me. And so, sorry.
You're fine.
And so about a year and a half after I lost Zoe, I attended an event out in Dallas and was introduced to a storyteller, and something, the light went on that I wanted to talk about Zoe. I wanted to talk about the impact that she had on my life and her friends' lives and our family's life, and just who she was. In fact, in Greek, the name Zoe means life.
Right.
And so I wanted to honor her life as much as possible.
Yeah.
And for me at that point, sharing not the details around losing Zoe and the struggle that she was facing, but who she was as a person to the people in her life.
Right.
And her impact. And that just lit me up. And I was able to share my story from the stage in 2018 at a TEDx event. And at that point, I wanted to start coaching others because other people were asking me, sorry, my throat's really dry right now. Other people were asking me how I could help them navigate their loss as well.
Right. And you, and that's how I found you, was through that TED Talk that you did in 2018. And just being able to see and hear your story was profound and transformative in understanding the circumstances at, but how you were able to process through that and move forward. And there were several things that you said that were just life-changing for me in a time when I desperately needed that message, not having experienced the same thing, but just understanding grief.
Yes.
And one of those, in being the, how you shared about Zoe's impact, even after her passing, and how that, in how she impacted others even after her death. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. There's a lot of realizations that take place in the grieving process. And by the way, grief is not relegated to just losing a loved one.
Right.
You can lose your... a job, you can lose a relationship. You can lose yourself to some degree. And so there are times when in life, when these losses almost provide a reset for you in a way. And you have to navigate your way through. Let's put it this way. When you go through a loss of any kind, whether it's a marriage or the loss of a loved one, you are pretty quickly transported down into like a pit of that grief, right? You just feel like there's no hope for your future. You feel that that maybe this is going to be the rest of your life. You're going to feel this way. You're going to feel almost as if there could be some anger in there. The sadness is definitely present.
Right.
And so finding your way back out of that abyss is very challenging, but every step that you take, another part of that weight comes off of your shoulders.
Yeah.
Every breakthrough that you experience allows you to accelerate your movement forward and some progress towards healing.
Right.
And so it's very important, I believe, to when you go through some sort of loss, that it's important to kind of assess the other losses that you've had in life and what you've gleaned in terms of what you've learned.
Right.
In that and building yourself towards resilience. And that was my experience. That's what I wanted to share on the stage in 2018 was that, look, we have to find a way to get up after the loss of a loved one.
Right.
Because it is, the pain is not serving us. And all, I know that it's not easy, but if we just take one step forward each day, even literally surviving initially is progress.
Right. Right.
Because there, you may feel like you don't want to go on yourself.
Right. Well, and one of the reasons why it was so profound is, I mean, I can, as a parent and having teenagers, currently have a 15-year-old daughter, it hits this, there's this resistance to even wanting to hear of that kind of loss because just thinking, I know my own, like, can I survive that? Could I survive this happening? There's a, when people approach other stories, I personally know it's how I've approached it. I know it's true for others. It's almost like a, something you don't want to look at. You're afraid to look at because it makes you question your own survivability. And especially as it relates to suicide, I'm curious were there any of other people's their own beliefs or judgments that you had to face that was compounding of your grief, or ways that were people and the stigma related to suicide, did that have an effect for your own journey?
I would say early on that there wasn't much of that coming towards us. I think it was shock.
Yeah.
Over 900 people came to Zoe's wake.
Wow.
The service took place around the corner from where Zoe grew up and where I lived for several years while I was married to her mom.
Yeah.
And never at any point in the 9 years that I lived there was there ever a line of cars on the road, parked cars, and 900 people came to her wake.
Wow.
That just tells me the impact. And so the other piece of it was that I don't know if I was going to be very tolerant of that type of behavior.
Yeah.
Or lack of understanding on people's part. I do understand that it does make you angry. As a dad who lost his daughter, I had moments when I was angry that Zoe took her life. When I don't understand something, when humans don't understand things, we typically default to fear.
Right.
And that fear could open up anger.
Yeah.
And that anger gets expressed in whatever way it's going to get expressed. I will say there was this one point a couple years after Zoe died, I was visiting her resting place and it was a beautiful summer evening. I typically stopped over at a resting place probably once or twice during the week and a couple times over the weekend. I just liked to go be there. It felt peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And this one particular time I was, I arrived and, I was standing just talking with her and I was kind of keeping my voice kind of low because there was a woman who was a few spots down. I don't know who she was visiting. I'd never seen her before at the cemetery. And at the corner of my eye, I can see she's coming towards me and she stops and she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, for your loss. Who is this?" I said, "Unfortunately, it's my daughter." Oh my gosh. What happened?" And I said, "Unfortunately, she took her life." "Oh, you're young. You can have more kids." Right. So here's what I say at that point. So it's laughable only because in my mind, I was imagining Zoe standing in front of me very much like I'm looking to the camera. She's like, did she just say that?
Yeah. She said that out loud.
Right. And so, right. Did I just hear what? And I think she realized as soon as it came out of her mouth, what she had said. She's like, "Oh, well, have a good night."
Yeah.
I'm sure I shot her a look like, really? You know, but. I know there were some other people that have claimed that, if Zoe was more attached to faith, that this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Or if she wasn't depressed, this wouldn't have happened. If.
Right.
I don't know. I would imagine that to some degree, all of it is included in this.
Yeah.
But that is wondering why.
Yep.
And that why is never going to get answered, Rachel. Mm. What is going to get answered is what? What am I going to do about this?
Mm.
What am I going to do to honor Zoe? What am I going to do to get back up? What am I going to do to survive the next day, let alone the next hour?
Right.
Because it's okay to do that.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. So that reminds me, in your talk, you said, "Will I survive this? Do I even want to survive this? What kind of dad lets his daughter die?" Some questions you might never say out loud because they're too dark or they only amplify the pain to excruciating levels. And so, clearly you got to a place where you could ask those whys and ask them out loud and handle those. What do you have to say looking back on having that be part of the process? Are those dark places and conversations and questions?
It's a reality of grief.
Mm.
You're not crazy. It's just a reality. You are an emotional being. You we process grief in a similar, I say similar manner, meaning we're all wired the same way.
Right.
We all have questions, and it's absolutely normal to go to those dark places because that's just the way our brain works. It's trying to find meaning.
Right. Right.
It's like, well, if that's the case, then that must be the case.
Right.
And then your brain kind of takes another skip. Well, let's open just one more door. Let's just go keep one more layer going. And then it can become a slippery slope.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where it can be a little bit hard, because some of those questions are so dark.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Maybe, you know, maybe I shouldn't have had Zoe in the first place, because I wouldn't be in this place today. Maybe I should have known better. You know, all these
they should.
What ifs and whys and some whats too. Like, you know, what kind of dad lets his daughter die? That was a very real question that honestly, it felt more painful to ask that question. Mm. And so that was a dark question that I asked quite a bit up front.
Right.
In my grief process. And yeah.
Because if you could have been just the most perfect version of you, then clearly somebody else's, their suffering and their choices would, you could avoid it. But that's
not. And we all wish we had a crystal ball.
Right.
Look, I heard something recently, Rachel, and forgive me because I don't know the source, but I heard somebody say that when somebody says they do the best that they can, that's not necessarily good enough. But as a parent, and you know this, even though the kid looks like us and sometimes behaves like us, they learn from us.
Right.
And we are only as good as our highest level of education, training, coping skills, level of coping skills, level of resilience, strength, you name it.
Mm.
And so we bring all of what we have at the time when we have our children to the table.
Right.
If it's resolved or not, those are our defaults.
Yeah.
And if we don't know any better, we can't do any better.
Right.
And so, but there's nobody out there that has a perfect parent child. There's a lot of good relationships. Like, I see the smiles on the faces of your kids when you guys are on vacation. Everybody's connected.
Yeah.
Everybody, it looks like they're having a great time and they like to be together. Like, there's certain, I think, signs and signals that show that there's some healthy, it's not saying it's easy for you, right? I mean, there's moments when, like, what the heck, right? But there are other moments when our children are really struggling, and I would love for children to feel more open. And this is maybe a pipe dream, but I would just wish that children had more outlets to express themselves, if not to their parents, to others.
Right.
And to feel safe doing it without any fear of reprisal or it getting worse.
Yeah.
But I think that that's, I don't know if that's just, I don't know if that's realistic.
Mm. For them, you know, to feel like they have those outlets, or for them to actually have the outlet.
Right. I there's always going to be an improvement, I think, to the services. Things have gotten better since Zoe died. It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
And there's been certain things that have gotten better. There's probably some things that have gotten worse.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that, let's go back to the topic of stigma around suicide. I look at back on it now. I don't blame Zoe. Mm-hmm. I kind of get it.
Yeah.
And I absolutely forgive her. And I hope she forgives me.
Yeah.
And that's a big component, I think, in suicide. A big component in suicide, is to be able to not only forgive them, but to forgive yourself.
Right.
Because you could only do as much as you could do at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd love, you know, if I could if Zoe was here today, I probably have a lot more tools to be able to help her cope with struggle.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. That's not guaranteed, you know? So yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I think too, and I heard Brene Brown actually just a recent podcast that she did where she went to the research to find out if it's true. She got it in her head to ask people, do you think people are doing the best that they can? And she went to the drawing table, came up with the research, and it showed that overwhelmingly most people who feel happier with humans overall choose to believe that people are doing the best that they can at the time.
Yeah.
It's very freeing.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we're growing up, you know, there are different views on what's considered failure.
Right.
And if you're able to wake up in the morning and navigate the day, no matter what your socioeconomic status is, no matter how much money you have, no matter what you do for work, nothing. Right. If you're able to navigate a day, that takes courage.
Yeah.
And there are going to be days when you're like, why am I even here?
Sure.
You know? And so then there's other days when it's like, I'm really glad to be here. Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really important that we have to find some sort of give ourselves a break as much as possible, that we did everything we could. We're still doing everything we can today. This isn't the Matrix where we can plug something in the back of our heads and learn how to fly the Hilo in 30 seconds from Tank because he uploaded the, we can't do that. That'd be cool.
Yes.
But
I'd love to,
but then all of us would be so super smart that there probably wouldn't be any problems. But again, that's,
yeah.
But yeah, so it's
a perfect world.
That's a perfect world. And we don't live in a perfect world. And so here's the other, another analogy that I like to make about grief is that when you are physically injured, let's say you fall down and you have a cut on your leg.
Right.
And, you know, you tend to that wound, you put ointment on it, you put a Band-Aid on it, and it probably takes a week or two for that, you know, that cut to heal up and eventually the scab to heal and then it goes away. Maybe there's a little bit of a scar there. Internal wounds, you can't see them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times the expectation from others is that, oh, it's been 6 months. Shouldn't you be over this by now? Mm. You know, it's been 2 years. Don't you think you should be over? No. This is something that you carry with you for the rest of your life.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it's weighing you down every single day.
Right.
But the beginning parts of this, just like a physical wound, it hurts. There's pain.
Right.
And it takes time to heal.
Right.
And I would say that emotional wounds probably take 4 to 5 times longer to heal, maybe even longer than that, than physical wounds, depending on the severity.
Right.
But losing a loved one is a deeply emotional wound.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you've seen people get stuck in, you said in that there was a grief survivor study that said 63% of participants were just surviving after loss, trying to make it to the next day, some to the next hour. And then this is your quote. You said, you remember being in a fog after her death, after Zoe's death, wreaking havoc on your life and even having phantom pain in your body. And you believe that's where a lot of people get stuck. And knowing that there's no timeline on grief, we can both agree to that. Can you tell me when you met that awareness and felt that nudge of like, hey, I might be stuck here and I want to move forward?
Yeah, I would say there was a very powerful moment about 2 years after Zoe died. Again, 2 years in.
Yeah.
Zoe is always on my mind. Every single day she's on my mind. But this particular time, 2 years after she died, I was in a pattern. I would take the commuter rail home from my job in downtown Boston. And it was a 2-mile ride from the train station to my house. And so I would get into my car every day, and inevitably about mile one, I would drive by a street that I used to live on with Zoe. And I would just start crying. And I would start beating myself up. I'm so sorry, Zoe. I miss you so much. I should have been a better dad. Like just staying these things, because anything at that point, because in a way you're so numb, you want to feel something, and pain, you feel pain. Even if you're numb, you feel pain. And I just wanted her forgiveness. And it got so bad that one day when I got off the train, I was already tearing up. As soon as I got in the car, I shut the door and I lost it. And I'm sitting there crying so hard in the parking lot of this commuter rail station that my windows are fogging up. And I go, I just got to get home. And so I'm driving, and now I'm screaming at myself in the car. I'm just beating myself up over and over again. I can't even remember exactly what I said, but at some point it was as if Zoe was sitting in the seat next to me. I heard her say, "Dad, cut it out. I'm okay." And I'm, whoa, I stopped. Like I immediately stopped crying, and I just was silent until I pulled into my driveway, and I sat there for about 20 minutes and I realized she's right. She's right. This is not helping me in any way. I'm not helping her friends, because what if I get home feeling like this thing? I just felt like that the rest of the night. I'm not helping my family. I'm not helping myself to move forward. And so that was a very powerful moment of realizing that I was stuck, but I had the power to change the narrative that I was telling myself. And we're always telling ourselves a story, Rachel.
Yes.
And it's either helping us or it's hurting us.
Right.
And so from that moment on, I decided that I wanted to help myself get stronger, because if Zoe, I didn't want Zoe to be angry with me for not carrying on. I just felt like, because I know that if the situation was reversed, I would want her to carry on.
Right.
And so that was a very big awakening. But, and that's just one aspect of being stuck. So another analogy that I like to use is that, let's imagine that your heart is, you know, a full milk carton. Let's say an empty milk carton, okay? And when you lose somebody, that gets crushed right down. It's flat. There's no capacity in your heart. In this case, there's no capacity in that jug. And as you begin to heal with time, you have those moments when things start to happen, where you realize something and you learn something about yourself. You get a little bit more strength. And as that capacity starts to fill in again, there's sections of that milk jug that pop into place back to where they are. And then ultimately what happens is your heart's going to get back to a certain level of capacity where it's back into shape, but not the original shape. There are dents and scars and there are indentations where this is the best that your heart is going to be, but it has capacity. And to some degree, those scars are a lot stronger than the original jug. So I hope that makes some sense.
That makes complete sense. I mean, even just when you said what was the shift in awareness was the narrative, because so many times, I mean, it's just pure example. In that car, nothing about your external world had changed at all. You were still going to carry the weight of that loss into the next day. But what shifted was the narrative that you told yourself about that loss.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is so incredibly healing.
It was healing. Yeah. I did. That was one of those moments when I said, did as much as I could for Zoe while she was here. And I know that if the situation was reversed, I wouldn't have wanted her to do any more for me than she could have.
Right.
Because she couldn't, you know? And so anyway, but yeah.
No, it's profound. It's beautiful. And that was the beginning of you taking steps. One of the quotes that you said, what if we created the space to take life's biggest losses from just being survivable to a place where we continuously choose to get up, which was the mantra of that TEDx talk, which is the duality. That's the duality of grief, is that, yes, I have this experience, but I also can choose to create with courage from this experience. And then you tell us how we can start to do that. And the first one, decide that you will survive every single day. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I believe that choosing to survive is a very powerful component of reestablishing the narrative to help yourself. Why? Because it's open-ended. It can go in many positive ways.
Right.
To say to yourself, I'm never going to feel better again. I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to be happy again. I get it. I said it.
Right.
I felt it.
Right.
But other days, I made some other decisions that had different effects. You know, choosing to get up in the morning and put your feet on the floor and get dressed and go to school or go to work and carry on with your day, that does take courage, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And so choosing to survive, what other option do we have?
Right.
You know, Sheryl Sandberg wrote a book called Option B. And that basically means that if your option A isn't available, meaning the person that you love, the next best option is option B.
Right.
This isn't you starting a business where failure isn't an option. It's not like that. You know, you can't burn the ships with a relationship, because if you burn the relationship, it's gone.
Right.
Right. But in loss of a loved one, even though it's not the same thing, there can be tremendous amount of strength and resilience and gifts that come in option B. And that's exactly what has happened over these last 10 years. The people and the relationships that I've established, the relationships that have been mended, you and I probably wouldn't be talking.
Right.
Right. Which I'm hopeful that this conversation can help somebody just move forward just a little, even just a little bit. That's good. Right. So, we have to choose to survive every day, even if we don't have anything going on in our lives, we still have to make that choice every day that we're going to continue to move forward.
Right.
Because, you know, if you have, you don't have to have a goal per se, but if you have an idea of that, I had an idea. I want to feel better. I want to have better days.
Right.
I want to be able to honor Zoe and myself at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay to do that. So how can I do that? I have to survive. I have to choose to survive every day.
Did you talk about the heart and the capacity growing as you're being with that grief? And did you find that your heart had to grow in its capacity for hopefulness and for that building up of into creating a life that you truly just enjoyed, which I know is kind of a segue into your second point that you made about exploring your badass self as point number two, being able to create more things that you enjoy in your life. Did you feel like over time you got to build that capacity, or was it like a one day I decided and then boom, I was just experiencing so many things I love to do?
No, that's a really good question. And I feel like it's really important to note that that's kind of the paradigm of life. Listen, when you learn how to do anything in life, let's say that you want to learn how to play the guitar or play the piano or become a powerful scientist or a doctor or a tennis player, professional tennis player, whatever it may be.
Right.
You have to go through a period of hard work. And then that hard work kind of turns into smart work.
Yes.
Right? It becomes smart work because you learn the basics about how to navigate your way through whatever it is that you're learning.
Right.
Then you get to an intermediate stage. Then you get to an expert stage. Then you get to a masterful stage. I don't know if we can ever master life. We can keep, you know, learning and growing as we grow. But even when we have setbacks, it's a reset. We have to kind of start from zero again. And that may be really difficult. And I know there's an analogy that's used over, you know, climbing a mountain. The first mountain is like your hero's journey. That's that really tough climb. And you get to the peak and then you come back down to the valley. And then it's the second mountain where you really learn the biggest lessons, where the capacity grows that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you already know how to traverse the mountain from your trials and tribulations going up the first time. Now it's about having fun with it in a way and growing with it and really kind of picking up the nuances of the journey.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where your capacity comes from. So your capacity grows as you learn how to navigate whatever it is that you need to navigate.
So how do you like to help people understand the explore your badass self?
So it's so funny that this has been a full circle moment with this part of the talk. I remember getting a call one day from one of Zoe's best friends. His name is Jerry. And Jerry was pretty upset. He was upset because this was 30 days after Zoe had died and he was back at school and he couldn't concentrate. He just kept on thinking about, I don't blame him, but 30 days.
Yeah.
My gosh, you know. And you're 16 years old, what are you supposed to do with that, right? And so I guess that he was just kind of daydreaming or just sitting in class, and the teacher got upset with him and said to him, it's been 30 days. Don't you think you should be back in, you know, right?
No.
So he actually just got up and left class, and he called me and said, yeah, I agree. And so he said, can I come over and talk? I said, absolutely. So we talked about it and I told him the same thing. I'm like, proud of you. Like I would do the same thing, you know? And so he didn't get in any trouble for it. And I was going to, you know, even though Zoe wasn't at the school any longer, of course, but I would have advocated for him, you know, at that point, just to be a little bit more compassionate. And the good news is that the rest of the staff was very compassionate with him. They understood. So, but he asked me, Zoe's gone. What am I supposed to do? And I remembered when I went through my divorce, I asked the same thing of my therapist. And she said, Eric, you're going to get up in the morning. You're going to put your feet on the floor. You're going to get dressed. You're going to go to work. You're going to come home. You're going to have dinner. You're going to exercise or watch TV. Then you're going to go to bed. And you're going to do that over and over and over again. Mm. Until that becomes your normal again. And there's a power in that routine.
Right.
It may seem, because we're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
It brings some normalcy back into our very, at this point, unnormal life after our loss. And Jerry, I know in my talk, I said this, that, you know, he had his sights on Europe touring with his band. He just finished up his first European tour.
Wow.
And he's playing with a band that has been around for 30 years.
Really?
So, yeah.
Do you get to tell us which band that is? I mean, like,
it's kind of funny because it's a heavy metal band.
Okay.
And the band's name is Atheist. I'm just saying that's what it is, but it's a very popular band. But that was like one of the bands that this kid has all of the Pink Floyd albums memorized. He can play the solo. I mean, he's just an incredible guitarist. But for him, I said, you're going to get up in the morning, you're going to get dressed, you're going to go to school, you're going to come home, and you're going to practice the guitar for hours like you have since you were 4 years old.
Right.
And then you're going to do it over and over again.
Right.
And that gave him something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And yeah. So for him, that's how he explored his badass self. He decided to choose something that brought some sort of passion into his life because that was what he could always turn to for some support if he couldn't talk to anybody else. Like it was a way for him to build up his own normalcy again, sense of normalcy.
Yeah.
And so when you explore your badass self, what you're doing is you're building that strength of normalcy back into your life.
What was that for you?
I it was the coaching, the speaking, and the training.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the other part of this that was pretty interesting is that across the street from my house, there was a young man. His name is Noah Hanifin. Some people might recognize the name because he's now playing in the NHL. And so, but Noah, when I moved into that house, Noah was outside practicing like any 10-year-old would be practicing, shooting pucks on net and all that stuff. But the difference was that Noah was out there every single day. Rain, sun,
oh, wow.
Snow, sleet, wind, hurricanes, whatever, right? This kid was out there shooting pucks on net or practicing.
Yeah.
And after I lost Zoe and I started to get into the speaking and training, I was struggling because I was still working in a corporate job and I wanted to do more of this. And I found myself being inconsistent. Mm. And so when I remembered that that Noah had to push back on resistance every single day.
Wow.
He wanted to hang out with his friends. He wanted to go out and do some things and play and all that stuff that, you know, that young kids should do. And every once in a while he did that, but he had a bigger goal and a bigger dream. And for him, that hard work would paid off. And so I'm like, okay, well, I need to consistently sit down and write my book. I need to make sure that I, you know, put my butt in my seat and start typing. Even if it's a page, it's still progress.
Right.
So it's the consistency that I think actually helps bring that normalcy back.
Right. But if something that you were, that lit you up, like you said before, just like the IT, now it was the coaching and this.
Yeah. I was helping people in a different manner now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And helping people in a different manner from, you know, instead of helping somebody to get their computer fixed, I could help them get to a breakthrough moment where they felt like, actually, I actually now have energy and direction to know what I need to be doing moving forward.
Yeah.
So that I can get to my better days, so that I can get back up and live beyond my loss.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that segues into your last point of realizing that you're not done. The quote is, when you accept that you have a purpose for being here, even if for 15 years, you're on your way to getting up regardless of the struggles that you face. You talked about Zoe's friends helping you realize your purpose beyond being Zoe's dad.
Yes. So it's interesting that you say that, Rachel, because that was the topic of my second talk that I just delivered earlier in March. And Zoe, one of Zoe's friends came to me and she standing in my kitchen. What are we supposed to do with this? Mm. And that is a question that sent shivers down my spine.
Yeah.
Because this is 2 weeks after Zoe took her life. And now I'm facing one of her best friends who's falling apart and confiding in me that she was planning on taking her life before Zoe did.
Oh, wow.
And so ultimately, what happened with her is that she realized that just within hours of finding out about Zoe, she realized that if she took her life, the pain wasn't resolved in her, it was transferred.
Mm.
And so she resolved herself to stay alive. And then, you know, standing in my kitchen that 2 weeks later, she wanted to know what she needed to do with this because she wanted to live beyond the loss of Zoe and do more. And and be more. And so she wasn't done yet.
Yeah.
And I wasn't done yet. Like when I told, her name is Beth. When I told Beth, look, no one's going to hurt themselves. Right. But here's what we're going to do. You and I are going to stay in touch with each other every single day until we don't need to. Mm. And then I could see her kind of relax, like, okay. So somebody's got me. Somebody, you know, somebody can watch. So it was her friends that pushed me to think differently about why I was here.
Yeah.
And this happened so quickly after Zoe died. It was like collectively they remind me of her. Mm. And little bits of, you know, personality, little stories that they shared with me. Mm. Zoe drawing penises on the wall in the hospital. I'm like, dude. You know? Which she vehemently denied. I'm like, yeah, okay. But that was something that helped keep those kids going.
Right. And for those that don't know the TED Talk, you were sharing that when she was in the hospital for herself, she was helping other teens that were obviously scared to be there, to be admitted in that part of the hospital. Like just all of it. She was the one that was helping to disarm their fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And she did it. Even if she wasn't at 100%, she was like, I got you.
Yeah.
It's not that bad here.
Yeah.
You know, and she was kind of trying to make them laugh too. And she had a very unique way of, she had a very dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
But she was like fiercely loyal as a friend and a sister. Mm. And I think that stuck with those kids. One of her friends just reached out to me yesterday telling me that she's pregnant with her second child, you know, and I'm like, this is just a powerful, you know, representation of life carrying on. Life does go on,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time, but time can't be the driver of your healing. It's a companion.
Right.
And so we have to take steps and they don't have to be gigantic steps, but we can only take the next step in front of us, which we do that on any journey we take, anything we learn how to do, anything. So we can't just climb that mountain in one big step.
Right. And I love that. Time is not the driver, but it can be a companion. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the last quote that I have, imagine making an impact with just one person because you chose to get up from something that didn't just happen to you, but for you. Decide to survive the things that aren't supposed to happen in life. Immerse yourself not just in the heartache, but the heart songs that you can play over and over again, and put your hand on your heart. That's a reminder that you're not done either. In Greek, Zoe means life, and I know Zoe would be pissed off at me if she knew I was wasting all of those good memories of her life and not living mine.
Mm-hmm.
That is so profound. Mm. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. I don't know, Rachel. I think that goes back to that. What I was saying a little earlier was that, you know, if the situation was reversed and I wasn't here and Zoe was... Mm. I would want her to carry on.
Yeah.
I would want her to be happy. I think they want the same for us. Obviously, I don't know.
Right.
But it's okay for me to have that hope.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a hopeless situation, it is okay for you to have hope.
Right.
And you have to be the generator of that hope. And I think there's some others that can kind of help kind of reinforce that for you to, empower you to have permission to heal. And I think that's really important because a lot of times, no, I can't. Cause if I let go of the pain, then I'm going to be let going of the person. You're never going to let go of the love that you have for someone.
You shared with me the story of someone you were coaching that had lost a husband for how many years before they
30 years.
And they had not dated anybody, had not put themselves out there, and then what did they discover?
They discovered that what her name was Lynn, and Lynn was just, she was stuck. I call her Lynn. I can't use her real name.
Yeah.
but Lynn was really stuck because, and her husband died when she was younger. So she wasn't old. She was in her mid-50s. Yeah. And But her husband died like almost 30 years before. I think he died suddenly from an illness or an accident. I can't remember one of the two. But when she ever thought about moving on, the pain of moving on felt greater than just holding on to, no, I can't carry on.
Yeah.
And it was almost as if she was stuck on day one. And when we were talking, I shared a similar scenario with her. I said, so Lynn, imagine that Danny was here and you're not. Would you want him to be happy and to carry on? Oh my gosh, yes. I wouldn't want him to be upset and carry on. And then it kind of, the light went on. She's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't believe. Now, I had to work with her because there's 30 years of regret by not, you know, carrying on.
Right.
But that really wasn't that difficult for her to get through, at least that piece. It took time. But instead, after that, we talked like 2 weeks after that. And she said that anytime she started that narrative of, you know, I can't move on, I can't move on, she remembered that her Danny would want her to be happy.
Yeah.
And so that didn't mean she jumped on, you know, Match or anything like that, but she was more open to possibilities.
Yes.
And I've lost contact with Lynn in the last few years. So I don't know, hopefully I wish her the best. I hope that she does connect, but so it's just one of those things where we really have to give ourselves, it's about reframing our narrative and so much can change and we have the capacity to do that. Just like we can choose to survive, we can also choose to change our narrative.
Yes. Yeah. Which really is such, I mean, that to me feels like the hardest part of
it is,
the process is when you are deciding to look at it from a different perspective. But as you said, opening your heart, even if just, I don't know where I heard the phrase, opening it even if just 10% more, just opening up to the possibility of something that feels hopeful and feels it could bring you joy. Is healing is a step in that direction. So if you, speaking to somebody who's listening, who might find themselves in the middle and the day after or the months after of a unimaginable experience or loss, or I love how you also include just grief being about any kind of loss, not necessarily death. What would you want them to walk away with today?
To give yourself permission to walk this journey as you need to walk it. There's no one right way to navigate grief except for the one way that works for you. And so there might be some that come in and want to offer help. There might be some that come in that want you to do things their way. But this is a very personal, emotional, and non-linear journey. And so it's the only way that we can navigate this. No one's going to help us and no one can heal us. It has to be up to us.
Yeah.
So whatever that one way is that works for you, give yourself permission to try it and just to keep taking one step forward every single day. Waking up is courage. Waking up is courage. Remind yourself every day, I'm figuring this out. And that can be a transformative way to navigate early grief and even later grief.
Yes, I love that. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
On the podcast and talking with us. Life-changing. And I cannot wait for the second TED Talk to be released. Where can we find that? Where can everybody find that?
So the second TED Talk, probably within the next 3 to 4 weeks, this is early April of 2024.
Yes.
By the time this podcast is published, it's a good opportunity, a good chance that the TED Talk will be published at that point. But the title is going to be called A Breakthrough Moments, Grief's Turning Point.
I love that. I can't wait to listen. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a wonderful conversation, Rachel.
Thank you, Eric. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. And be sure to like and subscribe where you listen to podcasts. And we'll see you again soon.